And welcome again to Brew Crew Online. I am Benjamin Orr. And today we have a special guest on. Colin is not in this week. We have Lou Olson from Reviewing the Brew. He's a staff writer as well. And Lou, good to have you on the show.
Nice to be here, Ben. It's always nice to talk to you.
Yeah, I didn't mean to call you Colin. I'm so used to it.
No, that's all right. There are worse things you could call me.
All right, I'm glad I haven't offended you, so.
No.
All right, first thing we want to talk about is this previous series with St. Louis, which ended today in a Brewers 4-3 victory. As you noted, Monday's loss shouldn't have been a loss, should have been a 2-0 win. Michael Fiers pitched very well. Frankie Rodriguez came in, did well, and then John Axford, as always, has been struggling, blew his sixth save of the season. But the Brewers have rebounded from that and won two straight.
Yeah, good series. A lot of good stuff was happening. I always like to see him show signs of life, and I saw that, the last 3 days. But yeah, that John Axford game, that was just ugly on all kinds of levels.
Yeah, there's not really much you can salvage from that, because we know the Axman has been struggling, tremendously this year, and it's something we haven't seen out of him before, because we were so used to him getting, the 40-some saves last year, and now this year it's just a completely different man. The bullpen has just been awful. And, even watching Frankie today, it's just he struggled, but he did pitch four games in a row prior to this. Or this was his fourth game in a row. And he did get into a bit of a jam, almost blew it, but fortunately was able to hold the save. What are your thoughts on Frankie? I know you were really big on trading him and getting rid of him, but with Axford struggling, is there really anybody else in the pen that we can use to close out games besides Frankie?
It's funny that you asked me that, because I thought about that yesterday while I was watching, runners on first and third with no outs in the bottom of the ninth. I was sitting there just thinking, God, this just cannot possibly get worse. But, the one thing about K-Rod is he digs himself to these awful holes, and he figures out a way to get out of them. And Axford used to be able to do that, and now he can't. For whatever reason, he can't figure out how to do that again. And so I still think that if the right deal came along, I think that trading K-Rod wouldn't be the worst thing in the world. I still have some slight reserved optimism for the season, so I'm not ready to completely cut tail, but at the same time, we're running out of time. I mean, a decision needs to get made soon, and so I think if the right deal comes along, you gotta trade K-Rod. You just have to.
Because I've done different series previews with other sites, and one of the questions I got asked to answer was, will the Brewers be sellers or buyers heading into the trade deadline? And I said, kind of neither, because they can't really afford to be buyers, because if Zach Greinke isn't traded, we need to focus our money on re-signing him. However, if they are sellers, I said it'd only be in one person, and that'd be George Gutierrez, because when Jonathan Lucre comes back, Martin Maldonado's been holding his own, and there's no reason to get rid of Martin Maldonado, and you don't need three MLB catchers on an NL roster. AL roster, I'd say okay, because you have that DH spot, but NL roster, it just doesn't make sense. So, I guess if it comes down to the Brewers being buyers or sellers, you could throw Frankie in there, but, he's one of the guys lately that's been really holding the bullpen down. I think sending down Dillard was a smart move, because Dillard has just been flat-out awful. Manny Parr has been a guessing game. Cameron Lowe, I guess if you wanted to say before his last few blow-ups, was our most consistent guy. So it's really an issue of who do you want to keep and who do you want to get rid of for that bullpen.
There aren't very many that I want to keep. I think that once John Axford stops relying on that curveball and has more confidence in that fastball, he'll correct himself. You could see it in that game on Monday. He for whatever reason is afraid to throw that fastball when he has to have it, but he doesn't have a problem throwing it when he's early in counts. So I would keep Axford. I would keep Cameron Lowe, because more often than not, he's fairly solid. But really, other than that, I have no attachment to any of them. I could really do without all of them.
I think I can agree there, except when you go into starting. I think starting-wise, you have to keep Michael Fiers, who's done amazing.
Absolutely.
You have to keep Marco Estrada, because I thought going into this season, Estrada was going to go into the bullpen, and he obviously hasn't had much time there, because he's had to go into the starting role to cover Sean Markham, and then he was injured himself, and now he's back to starting, and then Markham will be back. So I think Estrada is kind of our wild card right now, but starting-wise, you have to keep Fiers, you have to keep Gallardo, you have to keep Wolf. And I think, regardless of how his two past outings have been, I think Tyler Thornburg's a very interesting character, because he goes, I think, longer into games than Renicky wants him to, because he wasn't expected to be a starter. he was expected to be a bullpen guy, and he, you know, went five and a third innings in his first appearance, went two innings after that in his appearance against the Pirates, and then went 4 2/3 innings today against the St. Louis Cardinals. So I think Thornburg is definitely somebody going forward we need to work with, because if we do lose Greinke, we're going to have to work with somebody else that we have from our farm league.
Right. I think that Thornburg, although I do like what I see from him, I still believe that in the end he will be a bullpen arm. I don't know what it is. I don't know. I'm not really in love with his stuff necessarily. And so I feel like in longer innings and longer situations, he can become a liability. But I love Marco Estrada. I think Marco Estrada, if he were in the bullpen, you know, I think we'd be in a very different position than we are today. But that was not up to him, and that wasn't up to us. It was up to Chris Narveson, and he delivered. So, but it's, you know, it's, when I look at this pitching rotation, it makes me sad, because I suspect very deeply that after this year, it will be unrecognizable. I think what we have today in that starting rotation next year will be 60% different.
Yeah, and that's the unfortunate thing about it. But then again, the Brewers being a small market team, it's bound to happen. Right. You know, when we got Sabathia a few years ago, we knew he wasn't going to stay after that, you know, and stay for half a year. But the one person I also wanted to ask you about was a question I was also asked, was when we traded Casey McGahee for Jose Veras, you know, prior to that, we had just lost, you know, the Troy Hawkins and Takashi Saito. So, Lou, I have to ask, what is your opinion on Jose Veras?
The trade as a whole, McGee for Veras, was a fine trade. I don't think either side benefited, if that's possible. Neither of them have really done much to make the other side proud. McGee just comes off the bench and doesn't do much. And Veras is just an average run-of-the-mill bullpen arm that you can log a lot of innings on, but you just, it's a crapshoot what you're going to get night to night.
Yeah, I think it's fair to say about Veras, because you look at him and you don't expect him to have dynamite stuff, but in his last four outings, he has gone 3 1/3, given up no runs, and struck out 3 while walking 1. And I mean, he did fairly good, you know, the start of the season, and then just exploded and just lost what he had. And I think he's rebounded a lot from that. I mean, in June, he gave up 1 earned run.
Right.
However, in this month, he's given up 5, had really bad outings against Miami. So I think the Brewers' bullpen, it's just really, like you said, a crapshoot. Especially when I never understood signing Livian Hernandez. Because, you know, when the Brewers signed Cesar Torres and Cody Ransom, they're signing guys that have already been past their prime. And, I mean, Livian Hernandez is no spring chicken. The man's 37. So I don't understand why the Brewers feel like they need to sign these guys that their value's gone. I mean, it's not that they're bad players anymore. It's just that they're old players.
Ben, if the Hall of Brewers We Won't Miss has taught us anything, it's that the Brewers' history is riddled with them signing guys who are way past their prime and way overpaying for them. Now, you know, this year is a little different because they signed Ransom and his tourists out of necessity, as opposed to just, oh, this guy will be nice, let's spend $3 million for a guy like Mark Kotze. You know, the Brewers are just notorious for that sort of stuff, just signing guys who are past their prime and they probably should have just left alone to begin with. But, you know, with the way the bullpen is, I mean, I guess I can't really be upset with them bringing in anybody, even, you know, even if it is somebody whose best years, you know, Livan Hernandez hasn't been good in quite some time. And so you kind of look at that and you just say, well, they can't get worse. So you bring in a veteran guy who appears to be having fun in Milwaukee. I mean, every time I see him, he seems to have a big smile on his face. So that, you know, you can't put a price on stuff like that. And, you know, worst comes to worst, he teaches some of the young guys a few things, and then at the end of the year, he just goes away. So the Livan Hernandez thing I can live with. I have no love lost for his tours or Ransom. They both are terrible, and I could do without either. So
we definitely know Colin stands on Cesar Torres. So.
Yeah, he loves Cesar Torres. Cesar Torres is to him as Mark Kotze is to me. He loves Cesar Torres.
He's just telling about how he's going to get that Cesar Torres jersey.
Sweet, sweet.
But offensively for the Brewers, it's been a lot better. You know, Aramis Ramirez really turned it around when June started. and Norichiko, he followed him. You know, Corey Hart's been turning it around, and I think when Jonathan Lucre comes back, I think he's going to be the fifth and vital role to this lineup, because it's going to be the question of whether or not he can continue his production from being injured. And a lot of people say no. A lot of people think he was going to be written off. He's not going to be able to do what he was doing. And I don't think that's necessarily true, because what Lucre showed us last year, and even into this year, is he's one of the very few power-hitting catchers in the game. And that's very rare to see. So I think Lucre has established himself to be that type of player, especially offensively. And I think the Brewers definitely need that, knowing that they only really have one solid bat in the entire infield, and that being Aramis Ramirez.
Right. I don't know that I would call Lucroy power hitting. What Jonathan Lucroy brings is he brings an explosive offensive presence. Power hitting to me is a guy, a catcher is like a Mike Piazza type or somebody like that. To me, Lucroy is not a power hitter. He's just, when runners are on base, he knows how to drive in runs, and there is an awful lot to be said for that for a catcher. Especially in this day and age, when you have so many catchers who are just, you know, are batting eighth, ninth in the lineup and aren't producing like he does. I think when he comes back, he'll have a little lull, but I think he'll pick up right where he left off. And if he doesn't, I think that Martin Maldonado has done more than enough to prove that he deserves to be a part of this everyday team. I love George Gutierrez, and I always have, but the truth of the matter is that somebody has to be left out. And in my mind, it's Gutierrez without question.
Yeah, I've noticed that, you know, aside from the catching aspect, there's been an improvement, and I know improvement's a very long stretch to say, with Ricky Weeks, who has actually been doing fairly well in his past 10 games. You know, he had a huge home run last night that hit the Pepsi sign.
Yeah, 462, I think, was the official measurement on that baby.
You know, and I think he's starting to turn it around a little bit, and with the money we pay him, he should be. But it'd be great to see Ricky Weeks turn it around. At first base, I think, you know, Travis Ishikawa, I think he does more than we need him to do. I think defensively, at least. Offensively, it's just kind of odd.
Yeah.
Because it's been so weird with first base, because you've had Corey Hart there, you had Taylor Green there, you have Travis Ishikawa there, we had Matt Gamble there before he got injured. So it's kind of like a plethora of guys at one position, and Ishikawa is really it, because unless you want to put Jeff Bianchi there, there's really nobody you can put there. Unless you want to put Corey Hart there and have Carlos Gomez play, you know, right, or have Nori move over to right and have Carlos Gomez play center. I mean, or even Nigel Morgan. It's just, it's really different with so many injuries, because we had three critical injuries: Narvison, Alex Gonzalez, and Matt Gamble. And I think the Brewers have responded well to that. I think it's well, because they're only three games under 500, and a lot of people think that's terrible. But with the extra wild card spot, if the Brewers can improve their play, I don't think it's that much of a problem.
Yeah. You know, at this time last year, they only had four more wins than they do right now. So, I mean, you kind of look at that and you go, oh, well, you know, this season maybe hasn't been as bad as we've all kind of let ourselves think that it is. The truth of the matter is that if Ricky Weeks doesn't get going, then the team just won't. He's a black hole right now, or at least up until the last few weeks. The guy has been a black hole. I mean, you get runners on base, they're getting stranded if Ricky Weeks is coming up. You have a runner on first base and no outs, you can almost guarantee that double play or strikeout is coming. And when you can predict an offensive batter's inability to produce on offense, that is a huge problem. And it got to that point with Ricky Weeks. I mean, his batting average was tickling 150, and he had almost 200 at-bats. And it just, it's very, very disappointing. But boy, that home run was just awesome. I mean, he really just socked the piss out of that thing.
You know, it's kind of sad, because I noted about a week or two ago that Bryce Harper had identical stats to Ricky Weeks, and Bryce Harper's been playing since, I think, the end of April.
Yeah.
And, I mean, at that point, Harper still wasn't an everyday guy. Ricky Weeks is an everyday guy. And it's just, I hope he's turning it around. It'll mean a lot for the Brewers lineup if he turns it around, because Renicky can position his bat, you know, towards the mid last part of it. Because I think, the thing I always liked, and I saw Renicky do this a few times, was he actually had Lucroy bat second. And I like that a lot, because you have power at the beginning of the lineup and you have power at the end of the lineup. And you kind of have, you know, the meat of the order with Ramirez, Braun, and Hart, and then you could have, like, Nori and then Lucroy at the beginning, and then maybe, like, Nigel Morgan and Carlos Gomez at the bottom with Ricky Weeks. And there's really no wrong in that lineup if Ricky Weeks turns it around.
Right. But that's really what it boils down to in the end. You know, Nigel Morgan is finally turning it around. His on-base percentage is creeping up and creeping up. Carlos Gomez, you know, is Carlos Gomez. He's good sometimes, and sometimes he's not so good. But the truth is that Ricky Weeks, whenever Ricky Weeks has had successful seasons, the Brewers have had success. 2008 and last year, you know, you look at what Ricky Weeks did last year, and then you look at what he's doing this year, and it's kind of hard to believe that it's the same person. You know, he strikes out at just an unbelievable rate. I mean, it almost boggles the mind.
He has struck out 107 times this year, which that was his total of last year.
Yeah. So I mean, it's bad. It's really bad. I wrote something down that I wanted to add. You brought up Ishikawa at first base. I cannot think of a good reason why anyone other than Corey Hart should be playing first base the rest of this season. And I felt that way since Matt Gamel went down. There is no reason for anyone else to play there except Corey Hart needs an off day. Because you have so much depth in the outfield that there is no point to having Corey Hart in right field. Because Travis Ishikawa, as you said, he is an offensive mystery. I just don't know what to do with him. He is so puzzling to me. And when you have guys like Aoki and you have Gomez and you have Morgan, and those three guys are all vying for time in one spot in center field, it's kind of like, let's do what needs to be done. Put Corey Hart at first base for the rest of the year and let those outfielders get more time, because I think Aoki should be playing every day without question, and I think that Nigel Morgan and Carlos Gomez should split time in center, and I think that should be the end of the discussion. But yeah. Ron Renicki this year, all year, he's just been doing things that defy what I think is logic. So...
Yeah, I think there's a certain aspect that you take in it, and you look at the fact that the Brewers are still doing well with one or two positions not hitting well offensively, that being shortstop and first base. Shortstop, I'm just going to say, is kind of FUBAR right now, and let's just let it be. Yeah. Because, let's face it, are you going to really expect huge offensive production out of Bianchi, Asturias, or Ransom? Maybe Ransom, and I think if you're going with the rest of the season, Ransom needs to be the shortstop. But that's just me personally.
Yeah.
I think what really kind of upsets me, not really upsets me, but more like disappoints me, is really Taylor Green, because I thought he was going to do a lot better than he did. And yeah. I mean, he didn't really play as much as he could have, because, you know, obviously Renicki favored Hart playing first more time than Green. But I think going into next year, Green's going to have a little bit more of a vital role. And if he wants to completely earn it and not be sitting down to AAA like he is now, he needs to do a little bit better offensively. But I have to agree with you about Corey Hart playing first, because I think signing Ishikawa was more or less just one of the Brewers' panic things, because, like, oh my God, Matt Gamble's gone. You know, we had to sign Cesar Asturias and then later Cody Ransom to fill in the shortstop void with Alex Gonzalez gone, and we don't have anybody else to fill in for first. Well, they kind of forgot about Corey Hart. So that's the thing right there, and I don't really understand Renicki's mindset some of the time, but he's done nothing really that I'm really mad at him about. The other thing, I guess, would be that I think he takes pitchers out too long or leaves them in too long.
Yeah, but I'm not mad at Ron Renicki, and I don't think he's doing a bad job. I just sometimes I question his lineup decisions, and I question his defensive, I don't know what you call it, positioning, I guess.
Yeah.
But his formations, I don't know what to call them. They work sometimes, and I'll give him that, but sometimes they also just don't serve any purpose. And playing straight up would be just as effective. And you know, the Corey Hart at first base thing, like I said, to me, it just is a no-brainer. And I don't know why it's such a... It seems to be very confusing for him. He doesn't want to put Corey Hart there too often. And I know Corey wants to play in the outfield, but let's be honest between you and me. Any of those three other guys are better outfielders than Corey Hart is. Aoki, Gomez, and Morgan are all better defensively than Corey Hart is in the outfield.
And that's something I wanted to touch on, was Colin brought this up before, and it's obviously evident in Corey Hart's play, is he cannot play right field. He does not know how to play right corner. I've seen Aoki play that corner better than Hart has, and Hart's been there much longer. So yeah. I think if you want to go with somebody out there, it has to be Aoki and Wright, and maybe a combination of Gomez and Morgan in the center. And you have to put Corey Hart at first. He played first in college. He's been there before. He knows what it's like to play there.
We drafted him as a first baseman. When the Brewers drafted him, he was drafted as a first baseman. And then they converted him to third and then to outfield and then catcher. I don't know what else they did with him. But, I mean, you just kind of – if I think about the team and offensively what's going to work as well as what's going to work on defense, Aoki needs to be in right field every day. You can't have a guy who's batting 270 with an over 300 on-base percentage not playing every day. Especially on a team that can't seem to manage more than 3 or 4 runs in a given game. You have to have that guy in the lineup. And by not having him in there so you can play Travis Ishikawa at first base is, for lack of a better word, is just stupid.
Yeah.
Really stupid.
Because something Renicki, I think, should have done a lot earlier than he did was start Nori every day. And he never started Nori every day. He would start him, you know, every other day, maybe every third day, or put him in the seventh. And I never understood that. Because we paid all this money to get him, and he did very well in Japan, and obviously he can play baseball, and he's done well here, so I never understood it. Now I'm glad he's playing every day. He's definitely worth it.
Yeah.
And it's just, I don't know. Moving on from this, I want to bring up what we were talking about earlier before we started the show, was I saw the other day on Twitter you were talking to, I think, Brad, another staff writer reviewing The Brew, about a possible trade with Ian, getting Ian Kinsler to Milwaukee.
Yeah.
What exactly brought this on? Because I've never seen anything about this.
I hadn't either. Brad posted something. I guess in the late afternoon. I don't remember what day it was. Maybe Monday or Sunday. About how there were talks about Greinke going to the Rangers and us getting. And us getting Ian Kinsler, and I was like, oh, that's kind of interesting. I was like, what are the details of that? And what he shared with me was the details where it was going to be, we were going to send Zach Greinke, Nigel Morgan, and Ricky Weeks to the Rangers in exchange for Ian Kinsler and 2 pitching prospects. And, I'm sure that Brad's source is a guy that he knows and he trusts, but I don't believe that for not a 1 second. We are giving up far too much to get far too little in return. I like Ian Kinsler. I have no problem with Ian Kinsler, but Ian Kinsler and 2 pitching prospects is what we should get for Greinke by himself. I mean, that's really what they should be looking for, is a player like Ian Kinsler with some prospects in return. Otherwise, you keep Greinke and you don't waste your time with trades.
You know, because that's something we noted on last week, was if we're trading Greinke, we better get somebody like him in return, that talent. Not prospects, but somebody like him.
Yeah.
You know, like if we were talking about hypothetically, because the Angels had been interested in him.
Yeah.
And Colin just flat out says, C.J. Wilson. Not even breaking a sweat about it, not even kidding. I mean, if you're trading Zach Greinke, you're going to have to get somebody like that. We're just not giving him up for prospects that we don't even know that will even do well.
Yeah.
And, you know, I kind of understand it. It makes sense, actually, because the Rangers do have interest in Greinke. And,
right.
You know, the Rangers being a team built on pitching with, you know, Nolan Ryan and the Maddox brothers, it makes sense. But I just don't understand trading all of that for Ian Kinsler, who we know is a good player, but then uncertainty. I don't get that at all, and it makes no sense. You know, that's the reason why I don't think Greinke will be traded at all, is because what do you get for him? And if you do get anything for him, you better well know that it's decent, because if you're trading him for nothing, then you just got screwed out of a pitcher.
Right.
You know, because we had to think about what life will be without Greinke. You know, and if it comes to that point, is it just all we re-sign Sean Markham? Because that was a big thing, too, is, well, can they re-sign Greinke and Markham? And I'm thinking, well, no. So if we can't resign Greinke, then we'll go for Markham.
Yeah, the Markham thing, I have a pretty strong suspicion that he will not be back next year. Even if they can't get Greinke and they have the money, he was kind of mad this offseason that the Brewers did not make any effort to extend him out, and I think that he's still a little bitter about it. And so I don't think that is even in the cards. So I would rather them trade Markham. Problem with that is, He is hurt and has not thrown off a mound yet, which is a little concerning. But back to the Angels thing, I was thinking about this because I was, you and I talked, I think, about the different teams that had interest, and I would really like to get Peter Borges from the Angels. If we traded Greinke for Peter Borges and maybe a double A or single A prospect, like a middle infield prospect, that's a deal that I would take. Peter Borges, you're talking about a kid in his early 20s who now is in his third season. And last season, he had 500 at-bats, and he hit 320 with 12 home runs. And he's lightning fast in center field. So that's what you want in return for a guy like Greinke, is you want somebody who will contribute to your team for a long time. Because now all of a sudden, you've got Ryan Braun in left, you've got Peter Borges in center, and then you've got Corey Hart in right when the team is right. And that's a championship outfield over the next 3 or 4 years. That is a championship outfield. And that's what you give up a guy like Greinke for, is someone who will make your team better over the next few years. You don't give him up for another rent-a-player. You know, it's just not something that you do. And to me, Ian Kinsler is a rental player. We'll get him for a year or two. He'll hit free agency, and then we don't have him again. So I'd rather get a guy who's under club control for a few more years, so that way there is an actual benefit in return on Zach Greinke. Otherwise, I say we just keep him, and because we know he wants to stay in Milwaukee. He likes Milwaukee. We keep him all year, and then we renegotiate in the offseason and hope that he is not completely motivated by money like every other free agent we seem to go to term with.
You know, I like the Peter Borges thing, but I'd like to actually add to it instead of taking just a prospect. I'd like to throw in Garrett Richards to that.
Oh, yeah, I'd like that.
Because Garrett Richards, you know, this is his second season in the league. He's very young. He's only 24. And, you know, this year he's 3-1, 3.53 ERA. And he's somebody in the Angels rotation that is kind of, you know, achieving that ace status, I think, in a few years, because you're in a rotation with C.J. Wilson and Jared Weaver and Dan Heron and Urban Santana, and people always said that Philly had the best rotation, and I said, you have to look at the Angels. The Angels have some pretty darn good pitching, but I like Garrett Richards, and I think, you know, later on down the road, he's somebody that the Brewers could take a look at, because he's young, he provides, obviously, enough to be a major league pitcher. We have that with Michael Fiers. We have that with Marco Estrada. We have that with Giovanni Gallardo. And if need be, we can bring up Tyler Thornburg later on and have him start, because, you know, Randy Wolf's not going to last forever.
Right.
And, you know, a potential rotation of Gallardo, Fiers, not really in any order, Fiers, Estrada, Thornburg, and Richards, hypothetically, I would not really have a problem with that.
Yeah, I mean, that's a trade, though, that I don't think the Angels would be willing to make. When you have really young pitchers who show so much promise so quickly, I feel like teams are always very, very afraid to give away guys like that. So I feel like with Peter Borges, I feel like the Angels have enough depth in the outfield where they could give up a guy like that and still have a serviceable enough outfield to still be competitive, and that's what they're going to look at. A guy like Garrett Richards, you're right, I mean, he's so young. We would probably have him under club control for 4 or 5 seasons. I mean, to have a 23-year-old starting pitcher that you're going to control for, you know, 4 or 5 more years, and a guy who's probably a solid 2 or 3 in a rotation, I mean, that's something that I feel like a lot of teams are not going to give up. And Dan Heron, let's be real, Dan Heron is not the Dan Heron that we remember from a few years ago. Dan Heron has made it very obvious that he is on the way down. So, you know, Santana you still have, and you still have Weaver, and you still have C.J. Wilson, but, I mean, now you need kind of another anchor. And I don't think they would give up Garrett Richards, as nice as that would be and as much as I would like that.
Yeah, because Dan Heron has been spelling out of control the second half of the season for the past 3 years.
Man.
And that's, you know, a lot of fantasy analysts will mention that. But then you just look at the stats in real life, and you're just like, that sucks. You're not saying that he sucks. You're just saying that sucks because you know Dan Heron is a good pitcher.
Right.
But he's 31, will be 32 in September. And pitchers that are in, you know, that low 30s that don't have, like, an ace status, that just are run-of-the-mill guys, aren't guys that you're just going to say, oh, I'm going to go out and sign that after the season's over, because what else do they have to offer? Maybe 1 or 2 good more years out of their arm,
right,
and that's it. I've heard that the Braves also were very interested in Greinke.
Yeah.
But, you know, then again,
they don't have anything I want.
Yeah.
So a deal to them serves me. Well, they do have a shortstop prospect that I like, but he broke his hand. like 3 or 4 days ago. So that was pretty much the end of that. Because they called him up to get some spot work in, and his name is escaping me. I'll find it here.
Oh, Anderson Silva.
But I liked him a lot, and then he got hurt. There you go. Yeah, and he's really impressive. I mean, he's young. He's got a really good bat. He's lightning fast. But now he's hurt, so that's pretty much off the table. But again, he's not a guy that if we traded Zach Greinke, I wouldn't feel great if he was the best thing we got back. I just wouldn't feel good about it.
No, because we need a little bit more just from that, a little bit more padding.
Yeah, we got to get major league ready, slightly proven. A little inexperience I can live with, but it has to be slightly proven MLB talent. Otherwise, don't make it. Just keep him and build goodwill and sign him in the offseason for a little less money because you didn't trade him.
Yeah, I mean, there's really no team I think that has anything we really want from them, unless it, you know, ideally was that Borges Garrett Richards trade, but there's just nobody I feel comfortable trading Greinke to, which is personally why I don't think he's going to go anywhere. And if he does, he's going to walk, you know, when free agency hits. That's what it's going to be. And we'll,
right.
You know, he'll be a tight bay free agent. We'll probably get some draft picks for him, but that'll be it. You know, I don't see Greinke going anywhere before July's over. I've said it before. I'll say it again. You know, it's just Greinke likes Milwaukee. He likes pitching there. He just likes the atmosphere. He likes the fans. He likes his teammates. You know, and I think he's comfortable in there because he knows this is a team he can possibly win with. The Royals have never really been good in the past, God, what, decade? So, I mean, with Milwaukee and being in the playoffs in the past, you know, 4 years twice, he knows that's a team with potential there. And very well much this year because, like we said, you know, they're 4 games, you know, under where they were last year at this time. And with an extra wild card spot, who's to say they really can't make it?
Yeah, I mean, if I think about where they were 2 weeks ago, let's say, and I think about where they are now, it's almost night and day. And you know, if they would have pulled off that game in the Pirate series and then that game in St. Louis on Monday, boy, they would just be sitting pretty. You'd be going into the series in Cincinnati without Joey Votto in the lineup, and you have a chance to really gain some ground. But those two losses are just, those were just killers. They were just crucial, crucial losses. I mean, they really had to have those games. And so it's unfortunate that they didn't get them because this Red series this weekend is really going to tell the tale.
Yeah, and
if they go in there and they get swept, it's over. I mean, they might as well trade Greinke and everybody because they'll be 10.5 back of Cincinnati, and I just don't think that that's surmountable. And they'll probably fall behind the Pirates and the Cardinals more. And at that point, I just, barring some sort of magical miracle, I just don't see it happening.
You know, and it doesn't get any easier from here on out. We go on the road against Cincinnati. We go on the road against Philadelphia. And, you know, Philadelphia's had their struggles this year, but they're still, you know, a team to not, you know, take lightly. Then we play Washington in a four-game series at home, then Houston, then back on the road against St. Louis, and it's just, this is the time the Brewers need to realize it's do or die. I mean,
yeah.
There's no going back and trying to figure out what works. We need to know what works already. And, you know, Ron Manicki is a smart man. He knows how his team functions. He knows how it's been functioning, or lack of sometimes, with the bullpen. So, you know, I think the bullpen is going to be the weakest link for the rest of the season. I just don't see them improving that much. But if we can continue to play the way we are, getting decent starts out of our starters, having the offense at least score 4 or 5 runs a game, I don't think we'll be sitting pretty, but I think we'll be at least comfortable enough to breathe.
I think if you sweep Cincinnati, you put yourself in a position where now all of a sudden you're in the conversation again. Whereas right now we're not. The Brewers are not in the conversation. Nobody's talking about them to get that second wild card spot. But if they sweep the Cardinals, now all of a sudden you're going into August and September, and you are legitimately up there with the front runners of the division, and that's where they need to be. And if they're not there within the next 6 games, then maybe it is time to start shopping people and just seeing what's out there, because you can't keep doing what they're doing right now and just say, oh, well, that's okay for this season, because next season, like we talked about earlier, next season half these guys could be gone. So if they're already going to be gone, why not try to get something for them? Hey, I'm sorry, my dogs are fighting.
That's okay. They're just getting really, you know, pumped up about this.
They do.
they get very pumped up about the Brewers and the Packers as well on a football, slight football note. They get very excited about the Brewers.
Good team. I'm a Packers fan myself.
Attaboy. I knew you were. Deep down, I knew you were.
But, you know, going into that Cincinnati series, we have, you know, an interesting part of the rotation. You know, you have Estrada, Gallardo, and Fires pitching in that series against Andrew Bailey, Bronson Arroyo, and Johnny Cueto. Johnny Cueto, I think, is the most interesting pitcher in the NL. Obviously, the biggest snub, I believe, next to Zach Greinke for the All-Star game, but we've talked about it before. Not going to be an easy series. It is at Cincinnati. But they are without Joey Votto. So that leads me to believe there's going to be a little bit of a struggle there for them, but not too much of when you have guys like Drew Stubbs and Jay Bruce and Brandon Phillips in your lineup still.
Right. And I mean, I'm not saying that without Joey Votto it'll be a cakewalk, but I mean, if you're going to gain ground on the Reds, this has to be the time. There is no other time. He's not going to be gone long enough for it to make a huge dent, so you've got to get him right now. And if you don't, then maybe it just isn't meant to be, and we can all just try to enjoy the season and hope that we can retain Zach-a-Shack.
Yeah, because, I mean, as much as, you know, we Brewers fans hate saying this, you know, looking at last year when the Cardinals did come 10 back and getting the blah, 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 we know that story. But it's not implausible for it to happen, but there's literally a point in this season where you have to decide, is it going to happen? And as of right now, it's still up in the air. The Brewers still can do this, but if it gets to the point where we start losing too many games, then maybe we should just focus on next year and focus on guys we need to keep. We obviously know we're going to keep more than half the team, Braun, Ramirez, you know, Nori, Weeks, and guys like that. And then there's guys like we said, Greinke, who we have to worry about. And the bullpen, you know, who's going to still be up here after that? You know, are they going to completely gut the bullpen? You know, and there's things like that that the Brewers have to really question if they think the season is shot. If it's not, you have to prepare for October in the ways that you don't want to go out in a first round or you don't want to lose that extra wild card game.
Right. You know, and I wouldn't be opposed to them trying to buy something. I mean, that bullpen is just so bad that really any piece that they can add, at least to even just to provide depth, is going to be a positive in my mind. I just don't trust any of them. I mean, I really don't. Not a single one of them. You know, I like some of the bullpen, but the truth is that I don't trust not a one of those gentlemen. Not one. And, you know, last year I trusted almost everyone in the bullpen. It's very different how things change so quickly.
Yeah, because it's not really a much different bullpen other than the fact that Hawkins and Sayo aren't there. I mean, yeah, we did get Livian Hernandez and Jose Veras, but I mean, other than that, you bring up, you know, Tim Dillard again. It's not a much different bullpen from last year. No. And you just have to ask yourself, what in the heck happened? How did it change this drastically? And, you know, that's, I think, one of the most unanswered questions in baseball is why guys go through slumps and a slump can turn into a season slump. But if it came down to it, you know, I think if we had to bring up Mike McClendon again, we'd have to do it, because it's just one of those things that we don't need to keep out and going and getting guys. We need to focus on our talent that we have in the farm leagues, because, face it, that's our future. You know, and we have to bring these guys up and get them prepared at some point. And, you know, when rosters do expand in September, that's when the Brewers can toy around with it. You know, regardless whether or not they're in it, I think they need to toy around with it and see, you know, is Willie Peralta actually ready for it? Is Mike McClendon, you know, ready to be up here? And I think it's going to, you know, provide a lot of insight into next year.
You know, I think I really want to talk about Willie Peralta just really quick. I don't think that he is ready, and I don't think that he will be maybe ever. I watched him pitch this spring, and I watched him pitch last spring, well, what I could last spring, and he just doesn't have very good stuff. He either needs to work on his breaking balls more, or he needs to get stronger and throw that fastball faster, because the truth is that in the major leagues, he's going to get annihilated. I mean, his fastballs border on 91, 92. His breaking stuff doesn't break all the time. I mean, those are the sort of things that major league hitters are just gonna lock in on. The guys that I am very interested in, in particular, is Taylor Youngman. I mean, they've got him on the fast track. I would suspect that maybe even by the second half of next year, we'll see him already.
up on the major league roster. You know, they do have a lot of really solid young pitching that's making its way up. The problem is that how do you bridge the gap over the next, let's say, season and a half, just to be safe? How do you bridge that gap and keep the team competitive until those guys are ready? And that's what the team has to figure out. And what they're doing right now doesn't work. That, I think everyone can agree from top to bottom, what they're doing right now doesn't work. So we need to make a change. I don't know what it is, but I hope that they do something, because you can't, you know, you can't ride a broken bicycle forever.
And the Brewers this season really reminds me of an episode of MacGyver, in the sense that you have, you know, the rubber band and the paperclip and a piece of gum, and you still find ways to win. You know, MacGyver still finds ways to, you know, get out of whatever. And that's not the way you want your team to be. You don't want your team to be a MacGyver team or a duct tape lineup, like what they called the Giants in 2010. When they actually won the World Series, they called them a duct tape lineup.
Right.
And, you know, how many times out of 10 does that actually work? So, you know, the Brewers have a lot of talent to work with. We know this. And like you said, it's maintaining that bridge of still bringing these guys up, still getting these guys ready, and still being competitive in the NL Central. So it's a lot of work to do. And I think maybe it requires keeping some of the veterans so they can teach some of the younger guys. But, I mean, regardless or not, I think if this season's shut, you're going to have to gut some people.
Yeah, I agree. And, I mean, it's sad, but at the same time, it's just so very necessary in today's Major League Baseball. The bullpen is such like, when I was a kid, the bullpen, you only had, like, three or four guys in the bullpen. I mean, it was not what it is today, where, I mean, your bullpen has to be a well-oiled machine if you want to succeed in Major League Baseball. That, I mean, it's just, it's common knowledge now. If your bullpen is not a machine, you will most likely fail. And it's just the way things are now. And boy, our bullpen, I would be shocked if there were many bullpens that were worse than the Brewers' bullpen, top to bottom.
You know what they say, pitching wins games, so.
That is a fact. Hey, there's one story that I wanted to bring up, and I didn't bring it up before we talked, because I wanted to get your gut reaction. So Cody Ransom hits a game-winning grand slam, and I'm assuming you know what happened immediately after the game, right?
Yes.
He got drug tested. Now, what I want to ask you is, I'm trying not to laugh as I ask this, because I've been laughing about it all week. Do you think that that is a direct result of the Ryan Braun thing, or do you think that MLB was just trying to be funny?
You know, honestly, I think it's a direct result of the Ryan Braun thing.
Okay, I agree.
But the thing is, though, about just a really quick note about that, is just Ryan Braun, his numbers are better than last year.
Yeah,
and he
I know.
Was thoroughly tested and still is thoroughly tested, yet he's obviously on steroids, you know. But
yeah,
whatever.
Clearly.
But no, clearly, I would like to think it's a joke, but no, I think I think it's honestly the MLB just cracking down on it more than they have before.
I haven't laughed that hard. Hey, stop. Come on, man. I haven't laughed that hard about something Brewers related in a really long time. When I heard that the next morning when I woke up, I probably laughed for 20 minutes. I laughed in the shower. I was like, you're going to drug test a guy who has like 20 career home runs? Come on.
A guy who's batting, what, 216 on the year? I mean, really.
Yeah. Do you really suspect that Cody Ransom is taking steroids? Because if you do, more power to you. I personally just found it hilarious, and I really thought that MLB was just playing a joke on everybody.
If he is, he's not using them properly.
Yeah, if he is, he must not have read the directions, because he's not injecting them in the right spot.
Well, thank you for joining me this week, Lou. You know, it was really great to have you on. You're allowed on anytime you want to be, you know.
I appreciate
you know, there'd be even times we could have all three of us on, you know. I think that'd be great, so.
Yeah, that'd be nice. I'll make sure I lock the dog up next time so that doesn't happen.
All right, thank you again, Brewer Nation, for listening, and as always, stay tuned for next week.